Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal. I am so excited that you are ready to change the way you build relationships with your customer and really understand how to create a great customer experience. And we have a lot of great guests on the show, and I'm really excited to introduce you to my brand new friend, Brad. Brad, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So I do often say like, oh, I get to meet people for the first time on this podcast, but you and I did get to meet in person, ironically. And I got to be honest, the first time we met, you didn't quite look like this. It's not what I was really expecting.
Was I wearing my panda head?
You were.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that is run of the mill at events where sometimes I will wear that, which is always fun. But to quote one random person that walked next to me the last one I was at, she looked at me and said, wow, you're brave.
You know what, though? I just think it's good branding, right? Because, like, it's a conversation starter, and I knew exactly who you were. After the fact, I was like, who is that dude in the panda head? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that the people from afar were saying it was cool rather than what the other things that could probably be said. But, yeah. No, there's a lot that actually went into the Success Panda kind of brand. But happy to share more of that later if you want to.
Yeah, let's definitely dive into that. But first, I want to hear your origin story. How did you get here? What forged you? What changed your perspective on customer experience?
Yeah, so I would probably say, you know, I've always been a builder at heart. I enjoy building things and I enjoy helping others. And so I'm taking all of these kind of symmetrical circles, putting them together. Where's the Venn diagram of how I can help? And if I go back to 2015, I was working for a very large, here in Cincinnati, a very large company. They make airplane engines, if that narrows down the company. But I worked in basically an underground facility. So like there's a part of town where they make the airplane engines and there's this whole place underground. And I worked at this spot as a contractor for 3 months where I didn't actually see the sun. Mm-hmm. And I remember just being super depressed about that. And then I was just like, you know what? I'm not interacting with customers. I've kind of gotten away of what I've come to love. And so I basically started out on this journey where I had some success building some farmhouse tables. And so I was like literally from YouTube taught myself how to build farmhouse tables, and I was selling them, and I kind of went all in on doing that for a bit. And then the aha moment was I was approached by a startup founder who was just like, hey, you're entrepreneurial. Why don't you come work at this startup? And you can be our director of customer success. I'm like, customer success? What is that? You know? So instead of kind of starting at the bottom and working your way up, I was thrown right into the furnace of affliction, the fire. And I went to go work at a very small startup as a director of customer success. And I loved it. I loved serving customers. And I kind of found the nexus of, I enjoyed software, I enjoyed building, I enjoyed the technical, I enjoyed customers, I enjoyed problem solving. And so all of it kind of came together just by serendipity, I suppose. But yeah, that's kind of how I fell in to customer success. And I like that you talk about customer experience too. I think that's a under-discussed part of customer success that I'm really big on.
Yeah, I'd love to dive into that a little bit more. So you agreed to do this thing you'd never heard of. Mm-hmm. It can't have been as easy and a straight line as you just made it sound, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I went from a bunker and never seeing the sun to building tables to being a director of customer success. Yeah. Tell me more about when you got into that customer success role for the first time. Like, as someone who wasn't maybe tainted by the bad habits of someone who kind of grew up in customer success, how did you manage that and drive that forward?
You know, there's a reason why there's a saying called young and dumb, because you're just kind of a cowboy and you're just like, hey, I have all of this latitude and I have the trust and I'm going to go and do a thing. But yeah, being in a less than 10 person startup to begin with. We used to make the joke, me and my friend Adam, who was the director of sales at the time, we'd lean over to each other and be like, hey, are you HR or I am HR today? because we didn't have an HR, right?
Right.
And no, it was just it was very different because I was operating the enterprise. We did construction tech. We sold analytical reporting to a lot of oil and gas companies, and just being in on those calls and then really kind of honing the craft of, what are the jobs to be done that people are looking for. And I had familiarized myself with jobs theory, and that was proving to be very successful. And then I was just like, you know what? Let's mess with the product, make a three-tier offer, and they still have that to today. And so that's the cool thing about kind of startups, is that you have a lot, everything you do matters, and you have a lot of latitude to make a difference in the organization.
I also joined a startup. That was my first, quote unquote, I'll call it a job, but my first job out of college. I joined a pre-revenue startup. I was employee number one. I kind of muscled my way in there. They weren't looking for employees. They were just kind of like messing around with an idea. And then I just kind of showed up and said, I work here now. But you discover when you're in a startup role, you kind of do everything. And you're right. It is really just like that Wild West cowboy mentality of, well, I don't know how to do it, so I guess I'll figure it out, or I won't. And it'll go one of two ways. Either it'll work or it'll be a colossal failure, but there will be no middle ground.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing is that your level of risk appetite and your fear of failure is really challenged when you're in startups.
Yeah.
I have, we'll say, probably above average tolerance for risk, and then I don't. One of, I guess, the superpowers I guess I have is I don't really care what people think of me. I mean, everyone does to an extent,
Right,
but if
right.
there's a spectrum, I'm on the very much I don't care side, which has been probably a blessing and a curse at the same time. But in a startup context, it's really helpful because you're not afraid of failing, right? It's, I'll give it for instance. We had a one-tier offer, right, at that first position where it was one SaaS offering, it was an annual contract. One of the things, like, I try to read in my industry, I have books over here that I read in customer success, and I had just recently read something from Brian Tracy where he's just like, hey, success leaves tracks. Do what other successful people do. And so we're in a meeting and we're trying to figure out, like, hey, how do we grow revenue? All the things that we always talk about. And then I said, you know what? Why don't we just try to tier out our offer? And instead of like giving away the farm, why don't we just, like, with customers moving forward, tier this out because we can modulate and we can kind of chop up. And then we can present it in a way where we kind of like have a bronze, silver, and gold type situation, right? And then we do nudge pricing where we try to nudge them to the tier that we think is going to be the optimal service delivery. So, long story short, like that's exactly what happened. There was a moment where, we had our tiers, and I had my very first kind of, it was a renewal call, but now that we had these tiers, I was presenting them. And it was with a large construction engineering company. And I go into our tiny little room because we only had one meeting room. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like literally a test. We're going to see if this either flies or not. And we get on the call and I remember who the contact was. And I just say, we'll call him Jake. Hey, Jake, I want to show you something. And then I show him the tiers and I was like, hey, you're paying this, but we can give you this in the middle tier, which is where we're trying to nudge people. The margins are the best and the service delivery is the best at that. And long story short, he said yes. And I'll never forget, like, the CEO's face is like when I opened the door and I walked out, he looked at me and he said, well, and I said, it's sold. You have our first executive client. And I just remember he sat back in the chair like this, put his arms and just kind of looked around because that doing that product mix was able to take the average booking from 5K to 16. So like over 300%, right? So it was great. So we ended up upselling a lot of people to that. And that's the one thing what I meant where I like being a builder. That, to me, that's called creating artifacts where after you leave a company, they're still there, right? So if you look on their website, like it's still very much there, right? So which is cool. And that's what I enjoy doing. Yeah, and that was just one story, I guess, for that.
I love that too, because I don't know if you've ever worked for larger companies. I have consulted with them, never actually like been a true employee of them. And it blows my mind how risk adverse some of those big legacy companies are. Like they would never consider trying out something for the first time with a live customer. It has to go through 75 layers of approval and testing and thought process rather than just like trying something. What's the harm in just trying something, right? And I would love to hear your experience as you're seeing other organizations that are doing it right or other organizations that are doing it wrong. Like, what is the thing you would advise them to start doing when it comes to changing that conversation and creating an opportunity to leave artifacts?
Yeah, so the highest engagement post I ever had on LinkedIn was actually a meme. It got like 3 million engagements or whatever, and it had thousands of likes and like a lot of comments. But basically, the meme was it was a construction site where they had 11 people standing around a single guy in a hole digging with a shovel, and the meme was like, "We're a customer first company, right?" And it. The text was overlying the guy who was in the middle of the whole digging as the only CSM and all the other people
I
around.
think I saw that one. I was
Yeah.
probably
Yeah.
millions of
We're like
views.
one of the executives, so CEO, CFO, CTO, CRO. So the idea, I think the idea is there truly are customer first companies and there are pretenders, right?
Yeah.
Who they give lip service. And that's why it was a meme and that's why it was funny because people are on your website, they're reading that you're customer first, your marketing material says you're customer first, but then you haven't visited your customers in like, a year, right? Or you've never been on site, or, there's a bunch of reasons. So, like, being an actual customer first company is still, I think, a differentiator. People like to say they're customer first, but, the proof's just in the pudding. And to go back to what you're saying, something that I wanted to bring up where, working at big companies, and it's pretty well known now that a lot of the innovation comes from smaller companies and then through M&A, bigger companies buy smaller companies. It's like there's a book called The Innovator's Dilemma, which was written by Clay Christensen, who is a Harvard Business School professor. Who talks about in that book, he says, hey, like incumbents who are number one in the space, they have to disrupt themselves or they'll be disrupted. So the number one example I think that is salient right now is seeing what is going on with AI. So you look at Google, they're number one in search. It wasn't even close, right? Google should have been in the prime position to basically disrupt
Yeah.
themselves in AI. But then, when ChatGPT came out and up,
Yeah.
update AI. Or not update AI, ChatGPT, sorry. I was just thinking about the other company. But when ChatGPT came out, yeah, it just completely disrupted their entire model. Now people, they have a desktop app and more people are using that instead of Google. But when you don't want to upset that cash cow, right? I mean, who wants to upset that model that's making them so much money? But in a way, you have to at least have at least some sort of organization within a large company that is trying to actively disrupt, or at least trying to strategize and come up with ways to disrupt
Yeah.
your current business.
I wonder how many companies have like a red team inside of their business or something like that, where they're just out there trying to break things, make things, reimagine things, and to do it with freedom without restraint. But I do want to go back to and get your opinion on something. So we talked about that meme, right? The CSM digging the lone hole with 9 people standing around telling them how to do it and all that good stuff. I would argue that some companies have actually turned their customer into the one digging that hole because they're forcing them to basically self-serve to the point where they're doing all of the hard work on behalf of the company. What is your reaction to that thought? Are you seeing the same thing?
Yeah, no, you see a lot of the same thing. So the big thing is all of life is trade-offs. And Alyssa, we all kind of know this instinctively, right? If I decide to go to dinner tonight at one place, then I'm not going to dinner at another place. With when you have a culture of let's do less with more, you can take that so far to where now the person doing less with more is like literally your customers.
Yeah.
I get that people are wanting to be efficient and all of that. But people who are running these organizations and making these trade-offs, they have to understand the trade, right? And on the other side of the trade is that, especially with, AI coming up, there are going to be organizations that are going to run quite efficient, who might only have 10 to 20 employees, but they're able to still offer a higher level of service, where it's going to be the differentiator. Because the way that I'm seeing is, like, technology, the more, it's becoming more commoditized, from the sense of, oh, I'm looking for insights in this. Well, now there's a million companies that do insights into data, right? And so now this is why, like, the user experience, right, is becoming more and more important, and companies are always looking for moats that they want to build around. And so having a customer experience, more so than, like, what it is you sell, but how is the experience, I think, is going to become increasingly useful and profitable for the companies, and there's other things too, like building community, but having a customer experience is going to be incredibly useful to have, especially going forward.
I think you said something in the beginning about, like, custom companies like to think of themselves as customer centric when really they're not. And I think that is a lot of self-awareness that companies need to have. Like, if that's your business model, to be operationally efficient and to not necessarily worry about who you retain or what that level of service is, that's cool. Just admit that and, like, act that way, plan that way, be strategic, make the decision, right? But if you're going to stand up here and tell me you're customer centric and yet I'm doing all of the work to use your product and you're not helping me at all, like, you're not really customer centric then, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with it, but, like, be honest and open about what you really truly care about.
Well, and that's the thing too, is we haven't seen this level yet, but imagine you take some company, right? We'll take Google, for example, we were talking about. And let's say you have an AI that says, hey, replicate me, basically Google's UI or similar. And then you're competing when the commodity becomes the technology and the technical, right? When that has become overcome, and then the technical implementation is being handled and run and delivered on AI, then you can have some senior leader who actually, is a VP, SVP, who cares about customers, is just like, you know what? I'm going to go and start my own company where I'm going to invest and be customer first. And then I can stand up, the technical implementation and do what my old company was doing. And I think we'll probably see a lot more iterations of that as the technology gets even better. Because the big differentiator is people, they don't care what they know until they know how much you care. And we're going to be going more into, people are going to have, they already have endless choices, but now imagine you're going to have endless choices within the same segment, but you're putting a higher value on, what is my customer experience? Do they feel like these people are a true partner with me? Even if I'm a small, SMB, which sometimes people get dunked on when they are, like, a small account because they don't get assigned CSM or whatever. Eventually there'll be companies that will disrupt that segment of your business, because they will just care more about that segment, and they will serve them better, with a better service at a lower price. And so you always have to be on the watch out, because if you don't treat your customers well, then you won't have a business. And Enron had, they had their company, their values, and one of them was integrity. But that was why the meme is what it is, because you can put whatever you want on your website, but everyone's BS meter is quite high, and they figure it out pretty quick.
Yeah, and customers are less loyal than ever. It's so much easier to just, like, flip a switch and move on. And I'd love to get your perspective on this. I feel like people want to be rational, logical, and make decisions based on the facts. But I do think that people make decisions quite emotionally, even if they aren't willing to admit it. What's your experience with that in customers?
There's a good book that I require people to read. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, who won a Nobel Peace or Nobel Prize, not Peace Prize, but a Nobel Prize for that, for his work in economics. And basically, in the book, he goes into how there's basically two parts of your brain. There's system one and system two. So system one is your intuitive thinking, and then system two is, like, your rational brain. And to your point, most humans, they try to not engage system two. They try to go throughout their day using heuristics, rules of thumbs, using system one, because using system two hurts our brain. It's actual work. It's mental.
Yeah.
Work. And yeah, I totally agree that customers are less loyal than ever. And I think the challenge is that you have a lot of really smart, we'll say technical founders who are, we'll say heavy system two people who will think that it's about my customer needs to know X, right? It's about knowledge transfer. It's about providing some sort of insight. But really, that is, again, with technology and AI, it's getting diluted. The AI is getting better. You can almost know how to do anything. But those are those system two people. They're not like the system one, which are the feeling people, right? Right. So these are the people who they're driven by, and humans are driven by emotions. That's why for me, like with Success Panda, with what I'm doing, it's the business strategy is really like trying to tap in to human emotion, to human connection, and to helping people feel like they're deliberately choosing something in their life when there's so much change going on. And there's been so many promises. Social media promised us we'd never be more connected, but studies show people have
we're never further apart than we
yeah.
ever have been.
Yeah, together. People feel lonelier than ever. And so that's one of the bets I'm going in on is that the system one humans will continue to be humans. They'll want to have, you know, in-person events. They'll want to have actual communities with actual individuals, with actual people, and not just interact with everybody's agent all the time. I think that's a lot of speculation at this point to think that I want to sit with Alyssa's agent and just talk to some, you know, agent of Alyssa as opposed to sit here and talk with you specifically. So,
or worse, Brad's agent talks to Alyssa's agent and it's just two agents talking to each other.
Yeah. And then you know, your agent beats my agent because you're smarter than me. And now you get all my money. You know,
it's I probably just have, you know, better computing power. It's not even like I just have, you know, two computers instead of just one. Right.
Yeah. There you go.
So that's a nice segue, though. I want to hear more about what are you working on right now? So you were a director of customer success and now you've moved on. What are you working on right now? What gets you in the door on Mondays?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm all in on helping people. Right. So I'm the founder of Success Panda, and it is a go-to-market aggregator and platform for go-to-market professionals to help them thrive in their career. So, you know, we're trying to aggregate all things from mentors to mentees to mock interviews to companies to, you know, we have a bunch of stuff. But what really gets me going is helping people. And one of the things that I've discovered over this past year of being on my Success Panda journey is that a lot of people are in jobs where they report to bosses who don't do the free things well. And what I mean by that is they're working at a job where they don't feel appreciated, they don't feel seen, they don't feel valued. And when I meet with them, whether in a coaching, mentoring, or just networking capacity, and I sit and listen to what they, you know, are going through, right? There is such a big need to upskill both ICs and just leadership in general, right? If my one gift to the world could just be do the free things well as a people leader, that would be enough. My life purpose would be solved. Give appreciation, you know, praise in public, correct in private.
Yeah.
Just the free things that I could list, like 5 or 6 free things that you can do that cost no money that would make everybody's life so much that more better. But instead, we have to jump on calls and talk about it because egos are in the way and who knows what else.
Yeah, I like that. And in my other podcast, I talk about, it's called Taking Back Monday. And mm-hmm. I talk about exactly that. So this podcast is about customer experience and rebuilding relationships. Mm-hmm. That podcast is about rebuilding our relationship with work and this idea that, like, we have to do this thing and we hate it and it's terrible and we're unhappy. And my belief that if the leader takes advantage of doing the free things, as you said, and creates an environment where people enjoy their jobs, then they don't really have the Sunday scaries because they feel valued and they feel like it's something that they should be doing and are enjoying to do. So I'm in full alignment with you on that, that you can just do the free things and it can change the way people experience their jobs, which ultimately changes the way they relate to their customers.
Yeah, it's amazing how that works. It's almost like it's all interconnected. You know, like when you're a happy employee, you feel empowered and you can go out and solve problems at a much higher rate and much higher quality, right? So that's the thing, is it all starts from the top. And that's one of the things that I tell job seekers is, you know, when you're going for a new job, try to understand what are the true beliefs of, you know, who's running customer success? How do they view it? Do they see it as a cost center, a revenue center? Just understand all the things that they believe, because you fundamentally, you can't overcome those opinions. You can operate in your job, but what it is those policies are going to trickle down, right? And though that type of culture is going to resonate throughout. And so I'm also the type of person, like, I understand when people say Sunday scaries, but I've never allowed myself to kind of get in that, because I always just have moved on. When it's just, don't complain about the product. If you think the product's really that bad, you should leave, right? Yeah.
I did some consulting for a local bank, and they were getting a new CEO. They were hemorrhaging middle managers. And they did like an internal survey, right, to figure out like what was going on. And one of the questions that they asked that I thought was fascinating was, if your friend or loved one was looking for a job, would you recommend that they apply to work here?
Mm-hmm.
And it was an anonymous survey, like truly anonymous. 75% said no. Like, what a red flag. No wonder you're hemorrhaging middle managers, and no wonder you're hemorrhaging customers. Everybody hates it here.
Yeah.
But that gave the CEO a place to start on where she needed to prioritize her time.
You know, and the interesting thing about that, Alyssa, is that it probably comes from a handful of people, right? Which is why you have to be so keen in when you want to hire and bring on someone. Like, one toxic person can poison the entire well.
Yep.
And you just, if that's you and you made a mistake, you hired a toxic person, just, you know, say, you know, I mishired, no one shoots 100, you know, percent. And then just move on, because, you can't keep them in the team, because it's going to, especially in they're in a leadership position, right? It's going to perpetuate throughout the culture.
Absolutely. It's one of those moments where you got to have a little bit of self-awareness and humility and check the ego that, hey, you didn't get it right, but you can still do something about it.
Yeah. Humility is the biggest, I think, quality virtue that I look for in just anybody, ICs, leaders, people who, you know, there's whole like customer success scripts, Alyssa, that they just want to test you at some point where they make it, when you're making a demo, to see if you'll say, I don't know. They're going to ask you a question where it's just like the whole point of a question is you're never going to know it. They just want to see, are you comfortable saying that you don't know the answer, but you'll get back to them with it.
Right. Or are you going to sit there and riff and BS and hope for the best?
Correct. Yeah. And the number of people that try to riff and BS is not zero. Right.
Oh, no. My initial reaction would be like, well, I don't know, but I'm going to make something up and seem like I know. Right. Because I don't want to be stupid. Nobody wants to be the dumb one in the room. Right. Yeah. Not you, not your customer, not your boss.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and I think the humility aspect is just having enough humility to know that where you are today is where, what you know today is where it got you today, but that you have to be curious and be humble to know that, oh, you know, Alyssa might be younger than me. I might report to her, but she might know something that I don't know, right? She might know a lot of things that I don't know, and I'm going to open myself into, you know, listening to her ideas or other people's ideas. And I think so often, maybe this comes from how we apply for jobs and resume, you know, supposed to be all your accomplishments, all the things like that, right? But so many times people try to just say, you know, like, oh, I need to focus on what I know. And then you have the toxic end of that where people try to not knowledge share with other people because it provides them job security, like that 1960s playbook, I think, that probably doesn't work anymore.
Right.
So, yeah, humility is going to get you a long way, because that's been the number one thing that's kept my career moving forward, is that when I come into contact about something, some new concept, right? Whether it's in experience design, whether it's like the peak end rule, that's why I like reading books. You know, it allows me to keep learning. The moment I feel like, hey, this, how I ran as a director of CS in my last role, it's going to work at this new role, you know, like you have to be humble because your last playbook that happened in a vacuum at one company is not 100% going to work at the next one if you write in with too many built-in assumptions.
I agree about 110%. I haven't figured out how to screen for it yet, but I always tell people I'm looking for people who are truly curious, open to the idea that they don't know the answer, and willing to do what it takes to find it, right?
Yeah.
That's not really something you can screen. You can't see that on a resume. It takes more than just looking at a piece of paper and running it through an AI checker to, you know, see if they are a match for your job role, right? Not when you're looking for something that doesn't appear in a background check.
Yeah, in the current landscape, you know, having my thumb on the pulse right now of what's going on in the job market with doing some career coaching and things like that with people, most people are finding jobs through other people. So just as a life lesson in general, we find happiness and satisfaction mainly through other people. We get what we want out of life through other people, right? Mm-hmm. And most of the people I know that are finding positions, it's through networking. It's not mass applying. I tell people that I coach, mass applying is like going to the casino and seeing the 80-year-old grandma sitting at the slot machines, and then she's still sitting there 12 hours later, you know, still hoping and praying that the slot machine's gonna bring up that jackpot. And it might, but you're gonna be sitting there a long time and be spending a lot of time and money and emotional resources in order to do it. But just knowing that, that's really one of the big lessons I've learned along my path, is that your network is not who you know, but who knows you. And I also go all in on give first without any expectation of anything in return. And that way, if anything good happens, it's all cheddar. It's all great. But it really helps me stay positive and like happy, you know, because there's always an infinite reason, whether you're working in a company or you have your own thing or whatever. Like, having a negativity bias is built into us as humans, but the future belongs to the optimists, and people want to work with optimists. And you also need to be optimistic, I think, especially if you're working in customer success, because you have to believe that what you're offering is going to lead to success, help your customers, and be just generally bullish on the company. Because if you're not, like I said, if you've lost faith in the leaders of the product, then you're just treading water. You're just doing your time until either you get laid off, not on your timetable, or you end up leaving the company. So you have to have all of that to, I feel like, thrive in your current role. So if you feel like you're not, then, you know, you have to take action.
Thinking about all of the incredible people that you've had a chance to meet through your career, through Success Panda, or just through, you know, your own podcast, who is leading the charge? Who is changing the way we build relationships with our customers?
Yeah, who's changing the way we build relationships with our customers? Yeah, I would definitely say that a lot of the Mag 7, like people that are these CEOs, these leaders that are running some of these technology companies are, because the angle that I want to go at is with the introduction of AI being ubiquitous in the enterprise, the hope is I'm shouting out to all the ICs, right, that are working at these B2B SaaS companies, who they want to spend more time with their customers, realize the value they can bring by having more minutes in front of their customers, which, by the way, that's one of the number one KPIs that I always want to know. How many minutes did you spend in front of a human being, right, with your customers, listening, learning, you know, delivering? And hopefully as the technology gets better, we're going to liberate and truly allow all of, we'll say, that back end op stuff, some of the mundane, to get, automated, so that we can spend more time face to face with our customers. Because in the current environment, it's like we're sliding back the opposite direction, right? Where it seems like maybe 5 years ago, when the CS organizations were less mature, more minutes were being spent. But the whole less is more is catching up. People are, their books are too big. They feel burnt out. And we need to try to address that, right? With people, and hopefully all the people that are running these AI companies, the solutions actually help do what they say they're going to do, deliver on it.
I did some consulting for a large enterprise organization on their sales team side. So not the CS, the pre-sale side. Mm-hmm. And one of our processes was to do some research on how much time is being spent in front of the customer, exactly that KPI. And in that organization, we found on average that these sellers were spending between 21 and 30 hours a week doing data entry into their CRMs and notes and in like strategic planning meetings and not with the customer. And of course, when leadership hears that, they're like, well, that's wrong. We can't do that. And yet they've set up these systems and environments to make that a minimum base requirement so that they can, you know, have the data they need to fill in their reports and update their manager on their strategic plan instead of actually spending time with the customer.
Yep. That's my number one KPI. I also say it's the number one KPI of job seekers too, which is how many minutes did you spend in front of a person, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that's someone you're networking with, prior coworker, whatever. Minutes in front of people is a strong KPI, because it turns out people still make the decisions and not AI.
Exactly. Brad, if someone's really connecting with you, if they want to learn more about Success Panda or your projects that you're working on, where can they find you online?
Yeah, you can find me online at successpanda.io, and feel free to come over and create a free account if you'd like and come check us out.
Awesome. Thanks, Brad, for joining me on the Growth Signal.
Yeah. Thanks, Alyssa.